Well, thanks again, everyone, for coming. I know these the early Wednesday morning sessions are not the best, but I see a lot of people drinking coffee, so I'm going to have a lot of pretty pictures. I have some animated slides, so don't worry. It'll be good. So one thing I've noticed, I've been working in this field for a little over 5 years, and when we used to present back then, we had to have a lot of slides just on climate change. What is it? Why are we even talking about it? So it's great to see that at a general public health meeting like that, like this, it's kind of becoming less necessary to do that. You know, we've had really well-attended climate sessions. People are kind of all on board, at least in this community. Obviously, once you go back to state health departments and working with your collaborators, there's still a lot of issues. Within CDC, there's still a lot of issues. But I'm still going to show some of this background on climate change just to make sure we're all on the same page and just so that I can show my pretty slides. So this is the National Climate Assessment, the third edition of it that came out earlier this year. There are some physical copies on the back table if you want some. And there's also a fantastic website. If you haven't seen it, please check it out. It's very surprising that the government put this out because it's very like interactive, clickable, things are moving. It's great. But just some of the key findings that are relevant to what we're talking about today. Climate's changing. It's happening now. We've seen it happening now, and it will impact human health. So here are some slides showing what we've seen happening already. So this is not any modeling. These are measurements from NASA, NOAA, EPA, other agencies on what's already happening with our climate. So this is showing a baseline of summer temperatures from the 50s up to 1980. And here's how they've shifted. This is in the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. So you can see each decade in the summer, it's been progressively warmer. Not only that, but the baseline is flattening out. So you see the bright orange area on the right, we're getting a lot more of these really extreme heat events. So this is land surface temperature. We've seen the same thing with ocean temperature, a steady increase over the last half of the century. Same thing with sea level rise. We've got measurements going pretty far back on that. And constant upward trend that is accelerating. So what's happening now is much faster than what was happening previously and in the last century. And then we see another indicator with sea ice extent. So this is a slide showing sea ice extent in 1984 as compared to 2012 when it reached the lowest it had ever been. So these are kind of all indicators of a warming world. This is direct evidence. There's a lot more. EPA just released some more health indicators. There's a lot of ways we can track this, a lot of good science on it. So what does that mean for health? This is lovely spinning health effects slide. Beach ball of negative health effects is what I call it. But there are a lot of things. I'm sure a lot of people in this room know everything from vector-borne disease, you know, direct impacts from heat, injury from storm surge. It's a really complicated issue. So it's hard to kind of, wrap our collective heads around this issue. And this isn't even complete. You know, you might not see, there's a few areas where mental health is mentioned on here, but that's throughout all of this. And then there are other things that are not even on here. So it's a pretty complex issue, and it's something that the public health field is going to have to try to tackle. So at CDC, we have the Climate Health Program that I'm part of. It was established in 2006, but then formalized in 2009 with direct appropriation from Congress. So we do get money from Congress. We'll see if that continues. My fingers are crossed. But we fulfill three critical roles. The first is to analyze and translate climate scientists. So we work a lot with state health departments. Obviously, state health department doesn't have a meteorologist or a climatologist, so we help to look at the latest science that's coming out and try to translate it into the public health field. We also apply these findings to decision support tools. So for any of you who were at the town hall meeting last night, you saw some of the new tools that the federal government is putting out. Things like vulnerability maps, different ways of visualizing the data online, surveillance tools, working with state health departments to continue their surveillance, and also communication tools. For example, we have a media toolkit on extreme heat. So a local health department or other people can take these materials that are already designed and put them out in their community. Things like advertisements that can go on the side of a bus, or, you know, hangers that can go on the doors in nursing homes or elderly communities to warn about dangers of extreme heat. We also provide leadership. We work with a lot of different parts of the federal government, other agencies like state health departments, nonprofits, APHA, ASSO, NACHO, and try to create linkages between public health and other sectors. So it's not just a silo where we're talking about the health effects of climate change, but rather if there's, say, a city developing a climate adaptation plan, that health is incorporated into that. So what we're going to focus on today is the Climate Ready States and Cities Initiative, which is our main initiative at CDC for the health effects of climate change. These are the 16 states and two cities that are funded under this program. And the main framework that they use is called BRACE, or Building Resilience Against Climate Effects. So if you were at APHA last year, we had a session on this. And this year, we're going to be talking specifically about work that has been done under this framework by a few of our states in step one, which is at the top there, forecasting climate impacts and assessing vulnerabilities. So I'll just very briefly talk about what the other steps are before we go back and focus on the first step. The second step is projecting disease burden in the future, and then assessing public health interventions. You know, now that we've seen what the disease burden could be in the future, which interventions are most appropriate for this, and using evidence-based public health to decide what those are, and also which interventions are feasible to actually be implemented. And then using this information for step four of the framework, which is to develop and implement a climate and health adaptation plan. So this is actually putting the plans in place and getting it out to the community. And then listed as step five is evaluation, but this is really designed to have the evaluation throughout the process. And the arrows indicate that it's iterative. You know, it's not just right now, since BRACE has never really been used before, we are kind of moving through step by step. But the idea is that it's flexible. So this was designed for the states that we fund. But it's also hopefully useful for states and other interested agencies that don't have funding. We'll see how that works out in the future, but for now it's great to have a few states kind of piloting this and helping to refine it. You know, it's changing as we use it. So it's kind of a tool for prioritization. This is the little BRACE funnel. It starts with looking at your local health threats in your state or your jurisdiction, using that to go down and look at what does that mean for future disease, and then what are the specific intervention options, and then that focused adaptation plan. So the first step, forecasting climate impacts and assessing vulnerabilities, these are a few questions that help to guide that step. First is, what will the future climate look like in my jurisdiction, which again is those 16 states and two cities? How are the population and public health challenges likely to change? You know, how is climate change affecting these things as we move forward? And how does that shift population health, population of concerns, and vulnerabilities associated with place? Because we know climate change is very place-dependent. The goal of the step overall is to identify the range of climate impacts, and then kind of to decide which ones to work on based on specific vulnerabilities. And it gives kind of a comprehensive snapshot of the area's climate change outlooks, the different related exposures, and the causal pathways that can be very specific to a location, a range of possible health outcome, the different factors that are important for this, and deciding which factors you want to include in a vulnerability assessment, and then finally, the list of health outcomes to project in future prevalence, which would be step two of BRACE. Hopefully at next year's APHA meeting, we'll have another BRACE session on step two of BRACE. So there's two key milestones in this step. The first is developing a climate and health profile report, which several states have done already. It basically lays out everything I've been talking about so far. What's the climate in the area already? What are the health effects from weather and that meteorology already? How will climate change in the future? And this is consulting with literature. The grant requires consulting with a meteorologist. Sometimes that's a state meteorologist or someone at a local university. And then also to hypothesize what some of the disease outcomes might be using the knowledge they already have within the state health department on expert consultation, things like that. So here's a couple of examples of climate health reports that have been released. It's really kind of a focus on problem assessment and lays the framework that's necessary to move forward with BRACE. The second milestone in the first step of BRACE is a vulnerability assessment. So this is a summary of, usually a summary of individual vulnerability assessments. So there's some flexibility, but some states, for example, will do a vulnerability assessment on drought and a vulnerability assessment on vector-borne disease. And then this can be part of a larger vulnerability assessment, or each one can stay independent. And we really encourage using quantitative methods and GIS mapping, again, using evidence-based public health, and to help figure out different areas that are vulnerable. And these usually will, it gets complicated, but usually it will include socioeconomic, demographic factors, and characteristics of place that are important for figuring out vulnerability. So this is some guidance we released earlier this year. It's available online. Again, it's aimed at health departments, but I think it's applicable to anyone who's looking at vulnerability of from climate change. So it goes through and gives, it doesn't lay out a specific methodology because there's not really a gold standard. Rather, it shows what some people have done, different ways to think about it, and then we went through and did a case study for Georgia where we did a GIS mapping project for heat. And basically you get all these different layers, you know, okay, this area is more urban and we know urban heat island is going to have a problem or cause problems. This area has fewer trees. This area has more migrant workers. And then you overlay that with things like prevalence of air conditioning. And again, I'm describing it really simplistically. It's a very complicated issue. How do you weight each factor? There's a lot of things that have to be considered, but this is at least a starting point that can help people. And then I'm just going to briefly show a couple of examples. I'm not really going to talk about these, but this is the type of thing that a state might produce. So this was one already produced in Minnesota, and they did a similar thing as to what we did in Georgia. Using air conditioning prevalence and different underlying health factors that existed, and looking at which areas do we need to target when we're talking about future heat waves. And a similar thing done by California in Los Angeles, and we saw, if you saw the presentation yesterday, there's a presentation on this. So instead of giving more examples, I'm going to go ahead and let the states tell you what they've been doing and give some examples of their climate health profile reports, vulnerability assessments, and in general how they've been implementing the BRACE framework.